Good morning. Welcome to the June 1st, 2022 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District. We're going to always begin with our flag salute. And do I see John Ward out there? Would you like to lead us in our flag salute this morning, sir? If we could stand.
Please stand, raise your hand over your heart, and join me as I pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. I know we're going to hear a little more from you in a bit. With that, I would like to ask the secretary to call the roll and then remind our guests virtually how to participate in the meeting.
Yes. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Our legal counsel is here, as well as President Pauly. I am going to review the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody who has filled out a public comment card this morning that would like to make public comment at our meeting?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Very good. Thank you for that. We'll go to item 2. We have 2 public hearings this morning. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of Community Facilities District number 2020-90 Eagle Vista MV Ranch of the Eastern Municipal Water District, proposed rate and method of appointment, and authorize the CFD to incur bond indebtedness. I will now declare the public hearing open and ask for a staff report on the proposed action. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. On April 20th, 2022, the board adopted resolution number 2022-47, declaring its intention to establish CFD number 2020-90, zones 1 and 2, Eagle Vista MV Ranch, and resolution 2022-48, declaring its intention for the CFD to incur bonded indebtedness not to exceed $5 million. EMWD has received a signed petition by the landowners within the CFD, Pulte Home Company, LLC, and Watermark Homes, LLC, to form the CFD in order to finance applicable EMWD water and sewer facilities costs in lieu of fees, Valleywide Recreation and Park District fees, and Romoland School District mitigation fees. The project is planned for 139 single-family homes, and the property within Zone 1 is located in French Valley at the southwest corner of Washington Street and Keller Road. The property within Zone 2 is located in the city of Menifee at the northwest corner of Mapes Road and Palomar Road. CFD number 2020-90, as proposed, will be established in compliance with the district's comprehensive debt policy, meeting or exceeding all requirements. Annual special taxes within the CFD will have an average effective tax rate of 2% or less at the time of bond sale, and special taxes may be levied at their assigned rate as soon as a parcel is considered developed. The board has received and reviewed a Community Facilities District report for the CFD, which has been prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
Thank you, Thomas. I'd now like to ask the board secretary how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on May 24, 2022 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Melo Ruse Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Very good. If the secretary of the board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd ask her to supply those to the board now.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this item? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name for the record, or if we have anyone online. I see no one asking to be at the podium. Do we have anybody online wishing to speak on this item?
We do not. Hearing?
Okay, very good. Seeing that we have no further speakers, I hereby declare the public hearing closed. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolutions: a resolution establishing CFD number 20-90, Eagle Vista MV Ranch of the Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling an election therein, and a resolution determining necessity to incur bond indebtedness within the CFD number 20-90 Eagle Vista MV Ranch and calling an election therein. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt these resolutions.
I'll move it.
Moved by Director Corona.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. The resolutions we have just adopted to form CFD number 2020-90 authorize a special tax and call for a bond election within CFD number 2090, which is to be held this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2020-90, Eagle Vista MV Ranch of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution: certifying the results of the June 1st, 2020 special tax and bond elections within CFD 2020-90 Eagle Vista MV Ranch of the Eastern Municipal Water District.
I'll make that motion.
Director Cronin made the motion. Director Slauson seconded it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. The resolution just passed. I will now ask the district's legal counsel if there is a necessity for the Secretary to read the proposed ordinance to be voted upon in connection with these proceedings with respect to authorizing the levy of a special tax within CFD number 2020-90.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reading of proposed ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting in its capacity as the legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2020-90, Eagle Vista MV Ranch of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of a special tax within the district, may be waived since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance or may obtain a copy from the district's website.
Very good. I will accept a motion and a second to waive a reading of the proposed ordinance and adopt the ordinance.
So moved.
Director Corona moved the item. Director Slauson second the item. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. That concludes that item. We will now move on to our second public hearing of the morning. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of Community Facilities District number 2021-93, McLaughlin Village of the Eastern Municipal Water District, proposed rate and method appointment authorizing the CFD to include bonded indebtedness. I will declare the public hearing open and ask for a staff report. Good morning again, Thomas.
Good morning. On April 20th, 2022, the Board adopted Resolution 2022-49, declaring its intention to establish CFD number 2021-93, McLaughlin Village, and Resolution 2022-50, declaring its intention for the CFD to incur bonded indebtedness not to exceed $5 million. EMWD has received a signed petition by the landowner within the CFD for this one Century Communities of California, LLC, to form the CFD in order to finance applicable EMWD water and sewer facilities costs in lieu of fees. This project is planned for 126 condominium units and is located in the city of Menifee, south of McLaughlin Road and east of Barnett Road. Century Communities is expected to develop this property, and CFD number 2021-93, as proposed, will also be established in compliance with Eastern Municipal Water District's comprehensive debt policy, meeting or exceeding all requirements. Annual special taxes within the CFD will have an average effective tax rate of 2% or less at the time of bond sale, and special taxes may be levied at their assigned rate as soon as the parcel is considered developed. The Board has received and reviewed a Community Facilities District report for this CFD, which has been prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
Thank you, Thomas. Any questions for Thomas on this? Seeing none, I will ask the Secretary of the Board how the hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on May 24, 2022 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mello Rouge Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Thank you. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I would ask her to provide copies to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. This time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on the item? If so, please approach the podium and state your name. I see none. Do we have anyone on virtually that would like to speak on this item?
We do not.
Very good. Seeing no further speakers, I declare the public hearing is now closed. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolution, a resolution establishing CFD number 2021-93 in McLaughlin Village of the Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling for an election therein, and a resolution determining the necessity to include bond indebtedness within CFD 2021-93 McLaughlin Village and calling for an election therein. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt the resolution.
I'll make the
motion. Motion by Director Armstrong. Seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The resolution was passed by a vote of 5-0 to form CFD 2021-93, authorizing a special tax and to call for a bond election within CFD number 2021-93, which is to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2021-93, McLaughlin Village of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Very good. Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the propositions, I will now entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution. A resolution certifying the results of the June 1st, 2022 special tax and bond elections within CFD number 2021-93, McLaughlin Village of the Eastern Municipal Water District. Director Armstrong, would you like to make the motion?
I'll make that motion.
Very good. Director Slauson, I'd like to second that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The resolution is passed on a vote of 5-0. I will now ask the district's legal counsel if there's a necessity for the Secretary to read the proposed ordinance to be voted upon in connection with these proceedings with respect to authorizing the levy of special taxes within CFD number 2021-93.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reading of proposed ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting in its capacity as the legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2021-93, McLaughlin Village of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of a special tax within the district, may be waived, since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance or may obtain a copy from the district's website.
Thank you very much. I will now accept a motion and a second to waive the reading of the proposed ordinance and adopt the ordinance. Director Armstrong, would you like to make that motion? Director Slauson has seconded. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the ordinance has passed on a vote of 5-0. That concludes that public hearing. We'll now to go on to item 3 of our agenda this morning, which is our executive reports. General Manager Mawad is absent from today's meeting, but he has provided his written reports to the board. With that, I will go on to Laura. Do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Very good. Nick, I understand you do have something special for us this
yes,
morning.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to, at this time, recognize John Ward, Eastern's Director of Engineering Services. John, if you could just stand for a moment and be seen. I'll invite you up here. I have a plaque I'd like to present to you for 35 years of service. So after 35 years, John Ward has now decided it's time to retire. So 35 years ago, on June 10th, 1987, John Ward walked into the district offices and assumed the position of Engineering Office Aide 1. Since then, after 9 promotions to various positions in various roles and functions, he has assumed the Director of Engineering Services. His responsibilities as Director of Engineering Services includes many, many facets of this organization. Just to touch on a few, grant funding program, wherein John has worked with others in the district to bring in millions and millions of funding grant dollars in support of our operations and our capital projects. CIP program management services, John is very instrumental in putting in place the systems, controls, and resources to ensure that we develop a doable CIP program that meets our needs and that we execute that program as we commit to. Enterprise performance metrics, touching on many facets of this organization, looking at what we do and how we do that and identifying the efficiencies and increase efficiencies that we need to recognize as we perform the services that we do. GIS mapping systems, John was very instrumental in putting in place a GIS portal, which allows us internally and our customers and our users to access that system to understand where our infrastructure is so that we can develop our projects and support development in our service area. Utility locator services, to ensure that we know where all these systems and utilities are so that we can continue to expand our systems without disrupting what we have in place. Real assets acquisition and management. We have a lot of facilities over a vast service area. We have a lot of asset holdings. John knows where it all is. He's planning ahead to ensure that we have access to the real assets that we need to ensure that we continue to support our programs. So those are just a few things, but to be honest, I don't know everything that John does. All I know for me, and I learned this pretty much day one walking in on the job, which was just been a time frame of a fraction of the time that John's been here, is that John is the go-to guy. It doesn't matter what it is, what the assignment, how challenging, how unique it is. I've learned that I can go to John, and John will figure out how to get it done and do it well. And he does this, obviously, with his institutional knowledge, 35 years of understanding what we're about, how we do things, where things are. His vast understanding of our operations, not only where everything is and what we do, but why we do it and how we do that. I can go to John, and it doesn't matter, what the pump station is or the tank or the pipeline. He knows where it is, when it was built, can pretty much help me understand, what the challenges and conditions of any facility that we may need to know. Beyond that, one of the things I've really come to appreciate working with John is the relationships that he's developed, the relationships, the partnerships, internal and external, interacting internally with the different resources we have and our partners at other agencies in the community that we have to engage with. I've always recognized that John is the one who can point me in the right direction, make those introductions, allow us to sit down and ensure that we can do business in a very effective manner. And he's done this, obviously, through the lessons that's been learned over time, over 35 years, and the experience he's had. Also, John, I've come to appreciate, he knows where the skeletons are buried. And sometimes that is really important. And so he's a great advisor to me. He can advise me on risks going forward, the pitfalls that we might have to address so that we put in the right plans to ensure that we're successful. But most importantly about John is his can-do attitude. Doesn't matter what the challenge, the project, what the unique issues are, you know, go to John. He'll hear me out. He'll understand what needs to be done, and then he'll take care of it. And he has a saying. He always says it. I call it the John Ward motto, is we got this. Doesn't matter what it is. He always concludes the meeting, the conversation with we got this, and leaves me with a real strong sense of confidence that it's in good hands and it's going to get done. As I said, he's formed a lot of relationships internally and externally. We have a couple of guests. I call them guests. One's internal, one's external. We have Mike Gao, general manager with the Lake Hemet Municipal Water District, and we have Dan Howell, our senior director of admin services, who'd like to say a few words. And I'd like to invite them up to do that.
Unfortunately, we don't have time.
These folks like this for a while, and John keeps on telling me that's not necessary. John is going to be missed. I'm going to miss him, and it's going to be some really big shoes to fill. But with that, I'd like to ask Dan to come up and say a few words.
And as board president, I'm going to override you on this. So, Dan, please take the mic.
I think he's trembling, wondering what we're going to say, but we'll try to make this brief. So, John and I have been buddies since high school. And we've been best friends for most of that time since then. Shortly after that, a third member joined our team of friends, and that's our distinguished guest from Lake Hemet, Mike Gao. We've made quite a threesome over the years. And John and I have always joked about what we're going to say at each other's retirement goings away. And some of it I can share with you, and a lot of it I can't. But it does look like I beat him to the punch by his leaving before I am, so I'll get to share a few things with you that hopefully he won't hold against me. So when I was thinking of a few words to say today, there was two themes that came to mind. The first is, John is truly the most capable and resourceful person that I know, hands down. Also, no one, and I honestly mean no one, is more dedicated to this organization than John. So I wanted to share just a few examples of that. So in addition to bringing in the millions of dollars of grant funds and running the different programs that Nick had mentioned, John is capable of solving any maritime problem that may arise, and there have been a few. So I'll share with you some hypotheticals. If I were ever on a boat and that boat broke down in the middle of the ocean and the third member of the crew was green and seasick, I would want John there to help solve that problem and get us underway again. Or, again, if we were on that same ocean and decided to cross in the middle of the night with a hurricane brewing off the coast of Baja, I would want John to be our captain of that boat. He's that capable. And just a third example, if I were ever out in the desert and my car broke down, lost the front end, and I needed to somehow figure out a way to drive it home on three wheels, I'd want John there to help me solve that problem. These are all just hypothetical, of course. I'm sure none of that has ever happened. And then some. Those are the ones I can mention. But as I mentioned, I no one is more dedicated to the success of EMWD than John. And another example of that is more than 30 years ago, I don't even know that I was working here at that time, but John and I were on a weekend at the wetlands, and we were constructing or fixing a diversion structure or something to that effect. We were 20-something years old at the wetlands on a Saturday, and we'd run back and forth between his dad's shop and make some cuts and come back out to the wetlands and get this structure in place. And I thought, I'd like to be part of that. That is really cool. And John was an engineering tech or a planning tech or something at the time. I don't recall if I was ever here, but if I was a junior buyer. And there we were on the weekend at the wetlands fixing a diversion structure for a pond. So that's who John is. You know, regardless of his title or his area of responsibility, as Nick mentioned, He's the first to jump in and take the lead on a challenge like that to make it better. And everyone knows and respects how knowledgeable and capable he is and turns to him for advice. Nick mentioned that as well. And I'm from the field staff through senior management to the board, I'm sure John is the person to go to when you need input and advice on a matter. So for several months now, I've seen him working relentlessly in preparing his department for his departure. And I've cautioned him not to take it not quite as serious. I was honestly worried about him and just how serious and committed to leaving his department in good shape that he was. But again, that's who John is. So with that, I want to wish my friend, my brother, and I don't say that lightly, and his family a long and fulfilling retirement. I can't wait to add to those stories that I know we're going to do. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Gow from Lake Hemet, who brought an entire binder of stories to share.
You promised you wouldn't share those stories.
I'm not going to directly, but Mr. President.
I appreciate the binder. We do have to be out of here by noon, though.
Okay, so I will make it fast for you. But, Mr. President, directors, thank you for giving me the chance to say a few words along with you and congratulating John on his much-deserved retirement. To piggyback on Dan's comments, this is on the Internet. It's at www.johnward.com. And make sure you get the spelling right. I don't want you to go to the wrong website. But I am also thankful for a fateful decision I made back in 1989 to come work for you for EMWD. A year after that, I got to meet John, and it was fantastic. All the things I was able to learn, not only with Eastern's encouragement, but alongside with John, are things that I won't ever forget. My life was forever benefited from it. One thing that shortly after that, that John shared with me was one of his dad's sayings about contracts. And something along the lines that we all have the chance to make our own contracts. And it was about our fate that we share, but I think it applies to so many other things that we get to work with, not only between our two districts, but all the different relationships that John has and works with, whether it's trying to decipher one of Don Stewart's intricacies in one of his agreements or one of the contracts that Stewart's contemporary, Dan Hell, maybe wrote. Or maybe more importantly, more meaningful, just a simple handshake with John. John's always honored those various types of contracts, his obligations, but not because of the words that are written, but because who John is. And with that, I'm very thankful, and I'd like to end with a salute for Mr. John Ward, and I'm going to need everybody's help. If you recall back centuries ago, knights, when they would pass each other on the trail, they would raise their visor in the form of a saluted gesture that has been passed on to our military. God bless them. But I am no knight, and I am certainly no soldier. So with that, if you can, just join me in giving a thumbs up to John Ward for a job well done. Thank you.
To present John with this a plaque of recognition of service, and there's a gift in here. I haven't taken a peek in the envelope, so I don't know what's there. But congratulations, John.
Thank you, Nick.
Good luck in retirement. And
John, feel free to take the mic.
I'm going to be much more brief than my good friends, but what an honor and privilege it's been to serve the district all these years. Been given so many opportunities from the day I walked in at minimum wage as a student employee to where I ended up now. So you guys have promoted me to Director of Engineering Services. I went from a team of one to a team of 30 and just was able to accomplish so much with your support and with that team support. So just by way of legacy, we've had 9 general managers. I've had the privilege of working for 8 out of those 9. I've seen a lot of change. And one thing that I'm really impressed with is, you know, the culture of responsibility, the culture of ethics that this board and our senior management continue to represent. And so great privilege to be here, great privilege to retire at 35 years to the date, and I know the district's going to continue to lead the state long after I'm forgotten. So thank you again and for this honor and this privilege.
President Pauley.
Director Record, you're recognized.
Yep, thank you. I just want to congratulate John and also thank him for his service. John's been a great asset to me. Our families have been friends for a long time, and his dedication to the district was great and obvious, and I appreciate the help that he's given me and wish him the best, and I'm sure I'll see him around, either out in the ocean or out in the desert. So have fun.
If I could just make a comment. I've worked with John a long time. And first I'll say he's very technical, very wonky, and still not a nerd. So I appreciate that in you. But I've gone to you a number of times asking questions. And you said, well, I'm not in that department, or I don't do that anymore. But, and you're always on. You're always right on. Or you get back with me. So I've always appreciated your support. And I think you're really friendly. And I think that's why everyone likes you. You have a really good personality. I will say one other thing. Dan mentioned that there was no one more dedicated to EMWD than you. Well, that makes me question Dan's loyalty.
It's a high bar.
Okay, I'm going to miss you. Thank you for all you've done.
John, I had one final question for you. Sure. What was minimum wage when you started?
The district's carpool program was a hitching post. That's how long we're going back. $5.50.
$5.50, yeah. Okay.
And I thought I would take the gig for 3 months, and here I am 35 years later.
So. There you go. So, yeah.
Great program, great district. Keep it up.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being part of it. Yeah. So, all right, we'll move on. Linaya, do you have anything for us this morning?
No, just to echo everybody's sentiments, though. Congratulations, John. The PEC branch is going to miss you.
Very good. Matt, anything for us this morning?
Yeah, good morning. Just wanted to let you know that the repairs we were making and site restoration is complete at the Marietta Town Center that we had discussed a few meetings back. So all that work's done. We've demobilized from the site for now. That's done. The other thing I wanted to share is we finished updating our data regarding sanitary sewer overflows for the calendar year of 2021. And once again, we've really outperformed the averages in regions 8 and 9 in Southern California here in terms of, you know, preventing spills. And we've far outperformed the statewide average. So the team's done a great job again last year in maintaining the system and keeping the wastewater in the pipes. So just want to share that with you. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. Any questions for either of them? All right. We will move on to our consent calendar. And are there any board members that would like to pull an item for further discussion or take a separate vote?
Director Record.
I can move the consent calendar.
All right, we're going to have it moved by Director Record. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Director Slauson. But before we vote, I did want to ask if Jolene Walsh was available to give us a quick update on item L, which is the agreement with UCR on the affordable water services. If Jolene is available to speak.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
President Pauley and members of the board, I'd be happy to provide a brief overview of this item. Before you for consideration today is an action to approve an academic study by UC Riverside School of Public Policy to evaluate the affordability of water services in Southern California. If you recall, in 2019, EMWD embarked on a similar study to evaluate water affordability with UCR, and that study was limited to EMWD service area and only included about 8 years of data. The results of that study made a big impact in the policy arena in Sacramento, and was very informative and instructive for Eastern in terms of better understanding water affordability within our own service area. At that time, we approached Metropolitan with the concept that, gosh, this was such a valuable tool for EMWD that it would be something similar for all of Southern California. And that's finally come together. Metropolitan has agreed to partner with EMWD to do an all Southern California affordability study. So this study would expand the geographic scope of the original study. It would expand the content in certain ways. And one thing that we were really interested in understanding is the impact of budget-based rates on affordability. And considering the original study was only on Eastern, we really didn't have anything to compare against. But this study will include all the agencies in Southern California and really give us a better understanding of how our rate structure is also beneficial in terms of addressing the issue of affordability.
Really good.
The study is $125,000, and MET will be reimbursing EMWD for half of that amount.
Very good. What's the timeline on the study, when it will be back before the board with the results?
It will be back before the board in September of 2023. So this will be a rather data-intensive effort that is going to be time-consuming. But in September, UCR will have the results of the study. And as part of the effort with UCR, they will be publishing a peer-reviewed journal article, and they have agreed to provide as many presentations on the results as we would like. In addition, we will be hosting a workshop to review the findings. The last time State Board Chair Joaquin Esquivel was the keynote at that event, and we intend to do some similar large event after September once we have the result of this study.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Jolene on it? I appreciate it. I just wanted to have a little more in-depth for the board on that. I'm very much in favor of doing this and glad that MET has agreed to partner with us on it. So with that, we've had a motion and a second. Make it a roll call vote on the consent calendar, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Beckard?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Beckard?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. We will move on to our action calendar now. Item 5A is to approve and authorize a two-year agreement up to 3 one-year extensions with Babcock Laboratories Incorporated to provide analytical laboratory services in the full term not to exceed $2.3 million. Morning, sir.
Good morning. By way of background, on March 24th, staff received 3 submittals in response to a request for proposals for analytical lab testing services. Babcock Laboratories of Riverside, California provided the lowest cost, highest scoring response. The district contracts for lab services support EMW staff in the testing and analysis of drinking water, wastewater, and groundwater. Under this agreement, Babcock Laboratories, the district's incumbent service provider, will complete a number of routine laboratory services and also provide specialized technical analysis, consulting, and reporting as needed. Some of the services include analytical tests and preparation of reports for water quality monitoring, specific permits, and special studies sponsored by the district. Staff from the lab and the purchasing departments evaluated the responses in accordance with common selection criteria that include price and payment terms, company qualifications and experience, contractual exception, past performance, insurance, and safety records. Under the previous term, the board approved a 5-year agreement for lab services totaling $805,000. However, due to increased outsourcing services during the district's lab renovation project and additional regulatory test requirements, the board approved a revised contract total of $1,840,000 in November of 2019. The updated contract amount included funding for new state and federal testing requirements that require increased monitoring to ensure compliance with water quality standards. Additional project work also led to increased contract expenditures that require further lab monitoring and testing. Some of these projects include the development of a nutrient loading and treatment assessment, testing of new wells, Paris II monitoring and reporting plan, and the Temecula Valley Treatment Plant expansion. Moving forward, staff anticipate increased use of the contracted lab services for the upcoming contract term and have already seen a 12% increase of samples taken this year compared to this time in 2021. There are also a number of district projects that will begin during the contract term, including the Paris II desalination facility, the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination and Remediation Program, and the Hewitt and Evans Groundwater Treatment Facility, just to name a few. Expenditures for lab services over the past 12 months have totaled approximately $345,000. Laboratory staff anticipate spend over the next term to begin at roughly $380,000 annually in the first year of the contract and increase roughly 10% throughout the next five-year term. Under the proposed agreement, pricing will remain fixed for the first year with subsequent adjustments limited to a 3% maximum. It's our recommendation for the board to approve a two-year agreement with three one-year contract extensions with Babcock Laboratories to provide analytical testing services in the not-to-exceed amount of $2,320,000. Also wanted to point out to the board that we've invited Allison McKenzie with Babcock Laboratories this morning to our meeting.
Oh, thank you for coming this morning. Appreciate that.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from the board?
No, they've done a good job in the past.
So. They have done an excellent job. For some, my only question would be, under this contract, given the some of the inflationary things that we are seeing, do we anticipate we might have to come back at some point and adjust the numbers on this?
We're hoping not, President Pauly. We've added 10% each year into the term.
But I just know I realize things along this line do have a cost of services going up. So very good. Now, like I said, I think the Babcock has done a wonderful job for the district in the past and look forward to having them continue on. So with that,
Can I ask one question? Uh-huh. You spoke at the Water Task Force one time, the Riverside County.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. It was very enlightening. I appreciated that. I'd move approval.
Okay. Moved by Director Slauson. Second. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. And again, thank you so much for coming to our meeting this morning. Very much appreciate it. Love having companies we do business with show up at our meetings. So with that, we'll move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize award a contract with the Christian Brothers General Engineering for $923,000 with specification number 1424W for the Indian Street Pipeline Replacement Project, an additional appropriation of $1.3 million. Good morning, Mr. Kowalski.
Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board. Before I give my presentation, I'd like to introduce or say that we do have some guests from Christensen Brothers here today.
Good morning.
Right here.
Thank you for attending this morning.
Of course. So with that, I'm happy to present our Indian Street Pipeline Replacement Project. By way of background, the project's located in the city of Moreno Valley. It's just west of Paris Boulevard, south of Ironwood, and north of the 60 freeway along Indian Street. We'll be replacing an existing 4-inch asbestos concrete pipe that's essentially nearing the end of its useful life. We'll replace that with a brand new PVC pipeline that'll be resilient and provide improved reliability in the area. By way of bid summary, we advertised the project in March and we received 6 bids, 3 of which were deemed non-responsive. And after review of those bids, we deemed Christensen Brothers as the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid in the amount of approximately $923,000, just slightly above the engineer's estimate for the project. With that, we look to advance the project upon award today as soon as possible and complete in just under a year. With that, I'd like to make a recommendation that we advance a construction contract with Christensen Brothers General Engineering for construction of the project for the amount of approximately $923,000. Also advance a contract with Keeney Engineering, the engineer of record for the project, for engineering and survey services during construction for the amount of approximately $22,000. Third, administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work. And then our request today is additional appropriation of approximately $1.3 million, taking the total project to date to approximately $1.5. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions?
I have one question. When I attended a community presentation on this, one of the things that was discussed was the blocking of the sidewalk on the west side, that if they have to put spoils there.
Yeah, we'll have to. It's a narrow corridor, so we'll have to closely coordinate with the neighborhood and with PGA to ensure that we have appropriate space to mobilize materials and equipment and definitely spoil during construction.
Okay, all right. Just as long as, yeah, we're aware of it. That's good. Thank you. I'll move approval.
Second.
So we have a motion by Director Slauson. We have a second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming today. Look forward to working with your firm. So appreciate that very much. We'll move on to item C, which is, I believe, sir, going to be you again, which is to approve and authorize agreements with Ardura for $159,000 for engineering design services and Hunkstetscher and Associates for $178,000 for survey services for the Mead Valley and Good Hope Water Improvement Project, an appropriation of the amount of $685,000.
Yes, I'm back, and
you're
I'd
back.
Like to introduce our representative from Ardura, Mr. Ryan Houston, in the audience.
Okay. Thank you for coming, sir.
So I'm happy to present the Mead Valley and Good Hope Water Improvements Project. By way of background, this project will be funded through ARPA, or American Rescue Plan Act, through a co-op agreement with the county. We continue to develop our partnership with local stakeholders. This particular program will benefit the local disadvantaged communities of Mead Valley and Good Hope, which are essentially located in northwest portion of our district along the I-215 corridor. You can see that illustrated in pink in the diagram to the right. This program will do two things. It'll advance water improvements and sewer improvements. The proposed request today is for the water improvements side. We'll be back to present the sewer improvements project. We'll also be back to present the cost-sharing agreement in a future board meeting. As far as the project itself, it's illustrated in a little more detail to the right there. That is that pink area. It's just north of Ethanac Road. You have the first area in the south. This is the Olive Area Water System Improvements. And then to the north, along the Cahalco Corridor, you have the Cahalco Sewer and the Robinson Street Water Pipeline. So starting off with the Robinson Street Water Pipeline, this particular pipeline will close the existing gaps in the area. There's an existing gap and remote meters that exist today, so we'll refresh that with 1,700 linear feet of new PVC pipeline and make the system more hydraulically reliable. In a similar thread, we'll do the same thing in the Olive area, a little more involved down there. About 8,000 linear feet of pipe will again close gaps, replace 4-inch old pipelines that are beyond their useful life and correct the remote meters, which are essentially those meters that are connected at the end of a pipeline and just kind of run like spaghetti out to properties. So with that, we reached out to our as-needed services contracts that were previously competitively selected for this type of work, and we worked with Ardura, Hunsaker, and Atlas to negotiate scopes and fee for the effort. Ardura will provide the preliminary final design work. Hunsaker and Associates will provide the surveying work, not only for the water improvements, but also for the sewer improvements. And then Atlas will do the same for both efforts for the geotechnical work. We'll also reach out to other as-needed services to complete environmental and potholing work. With that, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract with Ardura for the water improvements design for approximately $160,000. To advance a contract with Hunsaker for the water and sewer survey services for approximately $180,000. administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete this work, and then our request today is appropriation of $685,000 to complete this work through the bid phase. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions on this? Very good. I will look then for a motion and a second.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. And again, thank you for joining us this morning at our meeting. I always appreciate the people we do business with to attend our meetings. We'll go on to item D, which is to approve and authorize award a contract with J.R. Feline Construction for $2,664,000 under specification number 1459S for the Temecula Water Reclamation Plant Dewatering Building Corrosion Mitigation and additional appropriation of $2.667 million. Mr. Cerna, you're going to present this morning?
That's right.
Thank you so much. The floor is yours.
All right, good morning. Again, my name is Edward Cerna. I am a principal civil engineer in the engineering department. I'm here to present the Temecula Reclamation Plant Dewatering Building Corrosion Mitigation Project. We will be recommending an award of construction contract to Feelonk Construction. And with us here today, I have Tom and Jeff with Feelonk Construction. And
welcome.
I understand that Ed Yang from Kennedy Jenks is attending remotely.
Okay.
So this project will take place within the Temecula Reclamation Plant. The Temecula Reclamation Plant is located at the southern end of Temecula, west of the I-15 and Diaz Road. The dewatering building houses a centrifuge and two belt presses, which dewaters digested sludge. This process introduces humidity into the environment. Moisture and off-gas from the liquid and sludge cake is corrosive and deteriorates the building's metal structure. Corrosion is visible on the metal building structure, in particular underneath the platform where air is stagnant. So Kennedy Jenks consultant was retained to prepare an engineering design to address moisture and air circulation in the building. So this project will minimize the moisture being introduced and improve air circulation in the building. This will be accomplished by, one, replacing the belt conveyors with screw conveyors to contain off-gas, installing air curtains around the centrifuge to also contain off-gas, retrofitting the foul air system by modifying foul air ducts to eliminate stagnant areas. We will also rehab the underside of the centrifuge platform where corrosion was found with new protective coatings. In April of this year, EMWD advertised the project as a maintenance project. Four on-call maintenance contractors attended a mandatory pre-bid walkthrough. In May, the district received two bids. As shown in the summary of bids, Feelonk Construction submitted a bid of approximately $2 million. The engineer's estimate for the project was approximately $2.6 million. If the recommendation is approved, the contractor will begin in June and complete the project no later than August 2023. So Kennedy Jenks is the engineer of record for the project. To provide continuing engineering support during construction, Kennedy Jenks submitted a proposal for approximately $87,000. Their scopes includes reviewing submittals, responding to RFIs, providing structural inspections, and change order support. So our recommendation today is execution of a construction contract with Feelonk Construction for the dewatering building corrosion mitigation project for approximately $2 million, execution of a contract with KJ for engineering support during construction for approximately $87,000, administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the project, and additional appropriation of approximately $2.7 million, which brings the total estimated project cost to approximately $3 million. With that, I can answer any questions.
Any questions on this item? So this, we're replacing something from 1992, correct?
About that time,
okay, yeah. So with the replacement, I'm looking for another 30-year lifespan on this mat, or?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yep. Okay. And some of the other work we're going to do will help prevent some other corrosion and things in the building. So, Yeah, there's several things going on in this project that will provide multiple benefits. So it's a good project. Yeah.
Okay. So it was built in 1992, which was during the John Ward era. Okay. Very good. Just wanted to be clear on that. No other questions. I'll look for a motion and a second on the item.
Move by
Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. With that, why don't we take about a 7 or 8 minute break before moving on to informational items. We will reconvene. We will have one more special presentation before Mr. Ward leaves the building. That is the fiscal year 2021-22 third quarter enterprise performance measures. Sir, for the final time, the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. What an honor. This is the board's report card, and I'm happy to report this is one for our refrigerator. All the metrics are performing incredibly well. Nicole Perkins, our business systems analyst, drilled into this at committee. I don't need to repeat that level of detail. I'm just going to highlight a couple of the key performance and allow you to move on with your agenda, and I'll get out of your way. Again, balanced scorecard across all functions of the organization. You'll note one here under consideration. This is the recycled water cost. We want to drill into this a little bit deeper. Make sure that reflects some of the treatment costs, some of the risks that we're avoiding, some of the other service obligations that we have in the recycled water enterprise. So staff has committed to our general manager and its board to bring back a refined metric starting next fiscal year. So water operating cost per acre foot, just you'll note the blue line, that is our historic average, and for quarter three, January through March, we're trending exactly where we expected. Just for reference, we drill into the line graph. We see dollars over acre foot, and the association there is almost directly related to the cost of energy, the cost of water. And then finally, we look into the services. So finance provides us with the background on every one of these metrics, and we understand, is it the purchase price of water, is it energy, is it allocated support costs? So with that, I'm just going to click through a couple of these. Wastewater treatment operating costs is in control. The only excursion for the quarter was in February. Due to the short month of February, we had a slightly higher unit cost since we only had 28 days of flow. Self-generated power, this is a positive story. While the fuel cells have been decommissioned, quarter three does not include any of the fuel cells contributions. However, it does include the most recent solar photo arrays that have been installed and are functioning. So since this is a performance to contract obligations, we're really pleased that the contract obligations are being exceeded by, on average, 6%. The Resbit 40-acre site is not included in this number yet. I understand it came on April. Customer hours out of service, the only excursion here, Director Armstrong, was in your area. It was a planned leak repair on Corson and Marietta, and the planned leak ended up being two leaks when our staff pressurized the system. We had 97 customers out for 16 hours. Because it was planned again, there was extensive outreach by Public Government Affairs. Wastewater treatment reliability just continues to perform incredibly well, Matt. This is average uptime for all four plants at 99.5%. And as you know, this is the source of our recycled water commodity. So we watch this measure very closely. Wastewater spills of collection, RWRF. Matt reported that we have compiled the entire year. But if you'll note, we had one in February, one in March. So really outstanding results. Across the district, this accounts for 1,800 miles of collection system and all four plants. And in doing so, all of the customer satisfaction score continued to perform incredibly well. So we averaged 4.5 for the quarter.
Injury illness rate is still incredibly low, slight uptick to a 1.2. We did have two injuries that are being looked at for root cause analysis. In terms of financial, our G&A costs are under control, best way to describe it. So while we had budgeted to keep us at or under 11.7, you'll note that we came in at 10.5 all 3 months of the quarter. Net operating margin, this is dollars in minus expenses, and while we have that historic trend, we always see it drop a little bit, January, February, March, but we continue to exceed that original budgeted target, so pleased with that. And then finally, one that's near and dear to my heart, the capital improvement project implementation. This is actual dollars to expected performance. Happy to report that we are at 85%. Through the month of March. That's very well across the industry. We're also forecasting to come in right at 100% for the actuals for the month of June. So, Nick, you have to call me and let me know if I forecasted correctly.
I will.
With that, Director Pauly, please report. All metrics are performing very well. Again, this is one for the refrigerator in terms of report card. I'll be happy to take any questions that the board may have.
Any questions, Director Armstrong?
Yes. So not on the slides that you presented, but I'm curious if we track, I guess, like our blended source of supply cost per unit. We have our import supply. We have our desalter, might have wells. You know, I'm just curious what our overall average unit cost is. You do have it.
I know we do. This, by the way, is under water services, all sources.
Yep.
So you'll see in the bottom, purchase water from Met, that's the dark blue. It from bottom to top, purchase replenishment water, if and when we're ever get a chance to replenish water. And then you'll see groundwater, O&M, payroll maintenance. So some of this is broken out on these services chart. But that unit cost for the commodity type or the service type, I've seen those numbers. It's all boiled into this value. But I'm going to pause here. I know it's coming up in the subsequent slides, cost of service.
Yeah. Okay.
As we pursue grants for replenishment or desalination, we are required to demonstrate that not only does it have a good ROI, that it's comparable to all the other sources, especially long-term. And so we always try to target what might Met charges in the future, and how would it compare to, say, the cost for desalination water? Right. So I know those metrics exist.
Okay, thanks.
We have the data to calculate it, so we can come up with something.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Mr. Ward? With that, I'm glad we had one for the refrigerator as your final report. So thank you again for your service here.
Very good. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. We will now go on to item B, which is the 2023 Cost of Service and Rate Study Workshop. And Mr. Adams, you're going to lead us this morning.
Yes, I'm going to do a quick intro and
all right.
Turn it over to one of our guests.
Okay.
So PowerPoint. Okay. So good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. This morning's informational item is really the first board workshop for the 2023 Cost of Service Study. We do have several others planned over the next 18 months to keep the board abreast as we complete the study and ultimately present you rates for 2024. Perfect timing. We are going into our second year of the two-year budget, but we'll have the study done to help us set the next year's rates for next year two-year budget. As you recall, the board did approve an agreement with Corolo Engineers back in March, and since March, staff has presented or has provided significant data to Corolo to start that analysis. Back in early May, we did do an internal staff kickoff meeting. I think it was May 3rd. So the study is well underway. With that board approval, we also engaged Colantuno, Highsmith, and Whatley as rate-making counsel, and Michael Colantuno is here today to make some comments during the presentation. So this morning, I have Mark Panny from Corolo Engineers, and let me introduce him to walk us through today's presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, directors. Thanks
good
for
morning.
The time. I appreciate that. So as John said, we're underway on this study, but we are still at an early stage of this, and that's why we wanted to come to you today to get your feedback, present our approach on this project, make sure that you have all the information. This is a fairly long process ahead of us. We still have, you know, almost a year. This is going to be wrapped up early 2023, so we do still have a lot of time ahead of us, but we wanted to get started with you early to make sure that we hear your feedback, give you a chance to provide feedback, understand our process. Just want to highlight the team. Jennifer Ivey, our project director, and I worked on the 2017 rate study, so we have a wealth of experience working both on the rates study side. We also recently wrapped up the FPC study last year. Our quality manager, Alex Bugby, is also working with the district on the recycled study that's wrapping up right now. So we understand your system. We're hoping to leverage that experience on this study. And as John said, we have Michael Colantuno with us today. He'll be providing his expertise on the cost of service and Prop 218 needs of this study, and he'll make a few comments today. So the purpose of our study, as succinctly stated as possible, is to update the water and sewer rates and charges to meet your revenue requirements within the framework of California Proposition 218. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the moving pieces in that. I do want to touch on a few of the updates from the last study. We made a full update to the source of supply allocation. So we lined up your sources of supply to the tiers to get a good cost of service alignment. We made changes and updates to the household budget and tier structure to better reflect usage patterns and that cost of service. We updated the wastewater rate blocks, as well as the fixed charges and the meter ratios behind those. And then we also made updates to some specific rates, including the Fruitvale rate that some of you might recall. Since that study was completed, there have been a few updates. The district has rolled out commercial budget rates. We completed the FPC study, as I mentioned, last year, and the recycled water rate study is wrapping up as well. So a lot of moving pieces going into this, building on that experience as well. Okay. So this is a multi-step process. It doesn't necessarily move linearly, though. We are going to perform this iteratively with each of these steps as we proceed. Each step will go back and update in this process. Right now, we've wrapped up our data collection, gotten a lot of the financial and usage information, engineering and operations information from staff. We are deep in our customer and usage analysis, trying to understand how usage patterns have changed in the last few years, building our financial model, ensuring that the district is meeting its cash flow, debt coverage, and reserve obligations and policies. From there, our next step will be cost of service. And that really kind of is the crux of this whole process. We'll talk a little bit more on that. Michael will make some comments as well. But essentially, that creates our nexus between the costs that the district incurs and the rates that you charge, which is a critical step in this process. And as I said, that's iterative. So as we build the financial projection and work with staff, we'll make updates to that to get that as fine-tuned and tailored as possible to meet those Prop 218 requirements. If we do that right, the rate design kind of does itself because everything's been allocated already, and so the rates are already sort of in place by that point. But we also do need to document that whole process, and we do that through public meetings like this, as well as the final report that we'll deliver to you. So I'm going to invite Michael Colantuno to join me for this slide. Just want to comment just briefly, and I'll turn it over to Michael, that in California, water and sewer rates are governed by Proposition 218. That's that nexus between rates and costs that I mentioned. We can't exceed the proportional cost of service, and that's really at the core of the study. I'll let Michael speak more to that.
Good morning. My name is Michael Colantuno. Among other things, I am a rate-making lawyer. We didn't need such things until the voters of California amended our Constitution two or three times to make the process of setting water rates extraordinarily complicated. My partner and I lost a couple of cases about a decade ago, also allowing class action remedies against local government revenues, and that attracted the attention of the plaintiff's class action bar. And you put those two things together, and I have a practice area. So what is it that I actually do? What I do is I work with your staff and your rate-making consultant to make sure not so much what they do and help you make rates, because they're professionals and they know how to do it, but how they express what they do. Because we need sort of three things. We need math, because that's the language they speak. We need English, because that's the language most judges speak. If they could do math, they'd be doctors or engineers, not lawyers. They went to law school so they could avoid math. And so I don't like to argue math to judges if I can avoid it. And then lastly, we need pictures, because everybody finds 25 interlocking spreadsheets really tedious to study, and a few bar charts explain an awful lot. So your retail water and sewer rates are subject to Prop 218. Non-potable water rates probably aren't subject to Prop 218 because nobody's obliged to take them. They're a business input. Typically, they're not the necessities of life. The law is not entirely settled on that point, and it's usually good public policy to comply with Prop 218 anyway, so you've got one consistent set of procedures for all your rates, and you don't have to explain to your constituents why the lawyers are splitting hairs. But so the 218 process largely is you prepare a rate-making analysis. We do it in a confidential way so that our earlier drafts can be ugly. And then when we're ready for our game in public, we release a draft. We'll issue a notice to everybody who's subject to the rate, wait 45 days, have a hearing at which people can come and object to the rates. In order to defeat your rates, there need to be written protests from 50% plus one of your customers received within a 45-day period, other than very small districts, that essentially never happens. But the process is still meaningful because most boards like yours are responsive to a much smaller objection. If you've got a quarter of your constituents out here, that's comparable to the turnout in local elections. You're not going to ignore that. So the process is constructive, even if it's not typically legally determinative. And then you're free to adopt the rates. And provided that the notice states this fact, there's now 120-day statute of limitations to challenge water and sewer charges, which is really, really helpful, because until this year we didn't have that protection, and every water bill was a new opportunity to sue, and every change in the law produced a whole bunch of lawsuits. So I'm here to help you articulate well. I'm here to answer any questions the board may have, and that's the process we expect over the next year or so. So unless there are any questions for me, I'll get out of the way and let Mark speak.
Any questions? Director Record, any questions on this?
No questions. Good presentation.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate it very much.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to offer, Mr. Qualentano is the premier lawyer in the state of California for rate making. He really is an expert in this field. I just wanted to make sure the board knew that.
Prop 218 is called the Right to Vote Against Taxes Act. When it was proposed, there wasn't an elected official in the state who was willing to stand up and speak against it. So they got stuck with me, a contract city attorney. And so I spent a year arguing with Joel Fox about this measure. And at the end of the year, because they only had me, it passed by 1 million votes, and I got a practice area.
So you have a very niche practice in California, is what you're telling us.
I do a lot of other things, but this is a niche that, you know, it's nice. City attorneys and general counsels need to be about an inch deep and a mile wide. This is a subject where I'm an inch wide and a mile deep.
Very good. Well, we're very happy to have you on our team, so thank you so much.
Okay, so going back to kind of the financial side, the financial projection side, just want to touch on a few of the drivers that we're keeping in mind in this big picture, drivers that are going to shape how we perform this study. The first of these is drought. So as I mentioned, we did the 2017 study, and as I'm sure you recall, we were in the depths of a very deep drought at that point. And so that really shaped our process. We've learned from that. We understand how to model around that. Our goal is to build the rate model such that there's revenue resiliency there in the face of drought, whether that's through drought rates or just perfectly aligning the tiers with sources of supply to make sure that there's cost recovery. That's at the center of our approach on drought. What is new from 2017 is cost escalation, as I've heard a couple times in this meeting, and I'm sure you're all kind of sick of talking about it. Inflation is higher than usual, of course. And so we're kind of navigating our way with this. But similar to the drought, we can appropriate some of the lessons from that and build our model such that it's resilient in the face of different scenarios. We already assume that there's cost drivers associated with met water, with chemicals, with those kinds of things. We're going to scrutinize those closely and make sure that our rate model is considering a range of scenarios. And then lastly, funding. As you know, the district uses a very diverse set of funding sources, whether that's grants, loans, pay-as-you-go capital. We're going to work closely with staff to make sure that we're getting the best information as far as project funding, because that ultimately shapes what is funded through the rates, whether it's funded now or over the next 30 years. So we're going to get that as closely tailored to your funding approach as possible. So kind of going back to cost of service, I just want to illustrate what that actually looks like. So we're going to take your budget, your CIP, your debt service, and we're going to allocate that to different functions that it supports, as simply stated as possible. It's the process of allocating all of those cost drivers to different functions. In the case of water, that's, you know, can be customer service and billing. It can be just building capacity, building new pump stations, building pipelines, or it can be the actual supply. So base supply, your local groundwater, your desalters, all the way up to peak supply, the untreated water from Met, and then tier one, and we avoid tier two, but we also incorporate the potential cost of that in the rate structure as well. And we're really following a process, an industry standard process, outlined by the American Water Works Association. But again, Proposition 218 overrides that. So we need to make sure that this is defensible, well-documented, and that all of the allocations are supported by the engineering need. On the sewer side, it's the same process, just different cost functions. So in that case, it's transporting wastewater influent, the flow through the collection system, treating the biochemical oxygen demand, treating the total suspended solids. And that is, you know, that's the Water Environment Federation industry standard process on that side. But it's the same approach. It's just a little simpler because there's fewer cost drivers in that case. It's just those three big ones plus the customer service piece. And that's really how we get to that cost of service 218 narrative. So these next two slides, I just want to touch on a few of the kind of rate design aspects of this that we want to have a dialogue with you over the course of the study about. There's going to be potential changes that we're going to bring back and looking at. On the water side, I mentioned last time we made changes to the tiered structure where we lined up the local source of supply to tier one and then built from there. So we're going to look at that and see how the current picture is and bring back an update. So expect to hear on that. Household budgets, we're going to talk with staff and see, you know, once we finish the usage analysis, how the patterns have changed, and then align that with source of supply, the allocation I mentioned. Drought rates, I mentioned we're going to build the model to accommodate different scenarios, but drought rates could be a piece of that. Wholesale rates, we've done some ad hoc analyses there, and we're going to work to appropriate that approach that we used for wholesale rates in the past, and that is kind of going to be shaped by the 218 process. You know, what costs aren't covered by rates. We're going to allocate what is fair and equitable to wholesale. And then lastly, 218. You know, we kind of harp on that, but it is so essential to this process. And on the sewer side, I apologize for the contrast that you can't necessarily make out the white text there. But let me comment on that one. That is the district-wide, service area-specific rates. Right now, the district has service area specific rates for sewer. So Hemet and San Jacinto pay one rate, Moreno Valley pays one rate, and so on and so forth. And we sort of left that on the drawing room floor during the last study, you know, changing that because, you know, the system hadn't quite gone through the full integration by that point. But, you know, now 5 years later, we're going to take another look at that to see if a postage stamp rate approach makes sense this time. And by that, I mean it's like a postage stamp. You pay the same price, and you can mail it to Orange County or you can mail it across the country, right? We're going to look at a similar approach for rates for sewer and see if it makes sense this time and bring back updates to you. I mentioned the recycled water rate study. That is currently finishing up. We're going to take the findings from that and make sure that, you know, there's balance between sewer and recycled. And that's, again, part of the 218 process. We want to make sure that sewer customers are paying their fair and equitable share. So just to wrap up, I mentioned this is a long process. I want to draw your attention to those bottom two rows on that table, the deliverables and the budget process. Focusing on those orange dots, those we have three more board meetings planned, two in the fall and then one early in 2023 to wrap up the study and get the rates before you for finalization. We also have a couple committee meetings, so that will be a chance to present some of the initial findings to you, to the committee, and get feedback and make sure that what we're presenting is meeting your questions. And then the budget process, February, March, April, we're going to work with staff to integrate the findings and draft budget into the rate model. Sort of gives us an opportunity to update the model if necessary and make sure that the rates are accommodating the cost drivers that are in place at that time. And then just looking conceptually at that diagram at the bottom, this month we're finishing up our financial modeling. Next month and into August, but hopefully before then, we'll be developing our cost of service approach, working with staff to get the engineering basis for those allocations. In the fall, I mentioned, we'll be coming back to both admin committee and the board with an update. November, we will be finishing up a preliminary draft report for review. And then in February, we'll be seeking board approval for rates, assuming that lines up with what we're getting from the budget. And then spring 2023, the budget process will be complete with the findings from this rate study. So, hopefully that was informational. I'm happy to take any feedback or questions you have. We really want this to be an opportunity for you to, kind of voice what you would like to see out of the study, because we do have a couple more updates ahead of us, and we want to accommodate your questions. So, again, thank you for the time. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I wrote one question down. You had a slide at the very beginning. It's like fixed revenue recovery increase or...
Not sure. This one?
Fixed revenue recovery increase, yeah. So my question is, because I think it's really important, fixed costs are, recovered with a fixed revenue if possible. And I don't know for Eastern if we have a goal, recover 100% or how we do that and how that would be incorporated into the study.
Sure. So this is something we look at often. It is very difficult to match fixed revenue perfectly with fixed costs, right? Because so much of your costs are fixed, right? Salaries, everything in that nature is fixed. And so you can't necessarily tailor that if there's a drop in demand. What we can look at, though, and what we looked at last time, actually, is this sort of quasi-fixed. We do have a certain amount of usage that really isn't going anywhere. I mean, in the case of any drought, there is a certain amount that is fixed, right? And so we do incorporate that. I won't speak to any kind of set target that the district has. We're working with staff to figure that out. I know in discussions that we've had already, we are focusing on potentially increasing that just in the face of building a resilient rate structure. It's a delicate balance, though, because as you pull away from the volumetric, you remove that price signal, right? And so there's less incentive to conserve at that point. So hopefully that.
I like your answer, and I like the idea that what you're not recovering with the fixed revenue, you're kind of building into that base supply that's not really going to go away, so that you do achieve fixed cost recovery. I just think it's really important, especially when you have these periods where demands have decreased a lot over the last decade or so.
Yeah, the other piece we'll look at is how revenues are spread across the tiers. We certainly don't like to see when too much revenue is recovered in tiers 3 and 4 because that's very risky revenue. And we saw that not with Eastern, but with other agencies, we've seen that particularly in 2015-16. As you recall, the governor had everyone cut demands by 25%. Where did that usage come from? It came from tier 4. And so if you were getting 25% of your revenue from tier 4, that really hurts your bottom line. And so we want to avoid a situation like that.
Director Record, any questions for our guests?
Well, I couldn't agree with Director Armstrong's comments more. It's so important, and as he said, we're asked to conserve, and if our majority of our revenue is based on commodity sales, that doesn't work. And so I'm really pleased that this is a big part of what we're doing. It's really important, and trying to get this message across the metropolitan and we're working on it, but I don't think fast enough. So I appreciate the fact that we're up to speed, and this is really high on our list.
Thank you. So I had one question, and this is a hypothetical, but, you know, because of the drought, we have certain Tier 4 people that just constantly pay their bill in Tier 4. They're not there to conserve. They're financially set, I guess, that it does not matter. So if this board decided, if Tier 4 is 4X, if we moved it to 7X, is that something in your, maybe this is a legal counsel opinion, but I mean, how much latitude do we have given drought situations, et cetera, to tell the people using the most water that it's just going to cost you a lot more and they're willing to pay it?
The San Juan Capistrano case, which I remember painfully well because I lost that case, says that you have to demonstrate that the cost to serve water in each tier matches the cost that you impose on your customers. There has to be a cost justification. The way we generally construct a cost justification to send as powerful a price signal as your data will allow is to sort your sources of supply by cost and assign the cheapest supply to the most efficient uses and the most expensive supply to the top tier. That's often not enough. And then the next thing that we often do is we take all of the costs of our conservation programs, which would not be necessary if people were not overusing water, and put those on the fourth tier. And then we're starting to run out of strategies which are easily explained in court. And at the end of the day, you're likely to have a price signal that's meaningful, but you may still have a significant customer segment that is insensitive to that price signal. And then your choices are continue to sell water if you've got it to sell, or go to command and control, which nobody likes and rarely works.
Can those conservation programs include capital programs designed to bring find new sources of supply?
Yeah. So, for instance, if you wanted to do a program to expand your exploitation of the effluent from your wastewater treatment plant so you can use it to supplant demand for potable supplies, that could absolutely be put on the top tier.
Well, can I ask along those lines of Director Armstrong, on a capital program, if this district, for example, hypothetically decided to buy capacity into an Orange County Ocean Desal operation?
That'll send a price signal. Yes, you can do that.
Okay.
So absolutely.
That was in the affirmative? That would
yes,
be some.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Any supply that you are acquiring because of that wasteful use that you would not otherwise need to serve your base demand can be put on the upper tiers.
Okay. No, that is very helpful. Director Slauson.
Well, I haven't thought of this until recently because of the drought, and I think I read an LA Times article defending continuation of building permits during a drought time. But wouldn't that be an argument for us trying to allocate the higher rate to the higher users because of additional infrastructure, et cetera? Wouldn't the counter to that be, well, but you're still approving buildings?
Indeed. And we have the capacity to serve those buildings, and those buildings are cheaper to supply because they're not wasting water. They've got all new fittings, they're using water extremely efficiently, and we made a policy decision to assign our most efficient and cheapest sources of water to the most efficient uses. You're not that.
I'm just wondering what a judge would say.
Depends on the
judge.
Judges can say anything they want. I'm really grateful for the Court of Appeal. But at the end of the day, I think my best legal advice to you is you are free to distinguish between efficient and inefficient uses, and you're free to assign your marginal supplies at whatever their cost to the inefficient use.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We look forward to working with you going forward. All right. Item C, State Emergency Water Conservation Regulations.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Last week, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted emergency water conservation regulations to reduce water demand and also increase conservation. And this was the latest action in a series of actions that the state has taken to address or respond to our current drought conditions. Back in July of 2021, the governor asked water suppliers for a voluntary reduction of 20% compared to 2020 usage. This has been the metric now that the staff at the State Water Board has used to, in essence, track progress toward that 20% reduction. And unfortunately, with the dry and warm conditions in March of 2022, when compared to water use in March of 2020, the state staff actually reported that the average water use statewide was nearly 19% greater when compared to March 2020. So as the governor's and his administration has continued to monitor response to actions, most recently, the March 28, 2022 executive order required the State Water Resources Control Board to adopt emergency regulations by the end of last week. And that's what these regulations that I'm going to highlight today are in response to. Before I get there, though, I did want to just again highlight the accomplishments that EMWD has continued to make through its investments in local supplies and water conservation. And despite our population almost doubling in the last 20 years, our per capita water use is down by more than 40%. Our reliance on imported water is down, and our local supplies, including recycled water, is up, where recycled water now makes up about 35% of our water supply portfolio. What that looks like on a gallons per capita per day, you know, as I mentioned, the state is comparing to 2020, but for EMWD, we are at a very similar per capita per day usage as we were coming out of the last drought. You can see kind of that period in 2016 to 2017 at the height, or 2015 to 2017, the height of the drought, we're actually even or below that. So talking a little bit more about the details of the actual conservation regulation that was passed, the State Water Board did release a draft of the proposed text in advance of the adoption last week, and they did incorporate comments from the water suppliers on that draft regulation. And really the main aspect that they accommodated was to provide additional flexibility to suppliers whose supplies are adequate. And this has been very consistent with this administration's response to that drought, to this drought, is trying to maintain as much authority at the local level as possible. In comparison to the last drought, where very stringent mandates were put down to the local agencies. So again, today, the administration is still trying to maintain that theme or that approach, giving the authority to the local suppliers. But this emergency regulation, I think, is a signal that agencies are being asked to do more. So it does call on agencies to formally implement the equivalent of their water shortage contingency plan to achieve at least or up to 20% water savings, so a level two. And what's interesting in the state staff's report, that about half of the state's water suppliers have not yet activated level two, which I thought was a very interesting data point. The regulation also goes on to define certain conservation actions for suppliers that don't have water shortage contingency plans. So for those that don't have a mechanism to implement level two, they've defined very specific actions that they are required to take. And they reported that 36 water suppliers have not submitted water shortage contingency plans. So again, those would be the suppliers that are subject to the specific requirements. The other key piece is the regulation bans irrigation of CII non-functional turf with potable water. They did define a handful of exceptions. One is when the system irrigates non-functional turf and trees or other perennial non-turf plants. There is a commitment by the State Water Board staff and the state to maintain our tree health. And in fact, part of the regulation does require a follow-up investigation and studies to make sure that the tree health is protected. There was also an ask to include an exception for low water use or warm season turf. There are certifications that are required to demonstrate a plant factor of 0.3 or less, and also demonstrate that the use is less than 40% of the reference ET. This was also an interesting point. DWR noted that they are looking at some different pilot studies to incorporate, hopefully incorporate warm use turf into not just non-functional areas, but recognizing that even some of our recreational areas are big water users, and is there an opportunity to maintain turf but maybe a lower water use turf? So this is something that's very, that the state staff has indicated they're very interested in further pursuing. And then also landscape irrigated with recycled water is also exempt from the ban on irrigation. These regulations are expected to take effect by June 10th and remain in effect for at least a year or until conditions change. Either they can be eliminated if the conditions improve, or they can be extended if the conditions continue to require these types of regulations. This next table gives a comparison to where EMWD is in response to these regulations. There's some more specific requirements that I'll highlight here, including some of the reports that are already established as part of the existing legislation, but have been the target dates for submittal have been updated. So this first item is a submission of a preliminary shortage plan by June 1st. And what a shortage plan does, this again is an annual requirement. It includes information for a potential anticipated shortage by a water supplier, triggered actions that the agency can implement, enforcement actions, as well as communication. We submitted our preliminary plan yesterday, and we are not reporting a shortage. Also, the requirement to implement level 2 of a water shortage contingency plan up to a 20% reduction, which has to be in place as soon as June 6th. As this board is very aware, we remained in level 2 after our last drought. And last fall, you took additional action to approve level 3A that accommodates up to a 25% reduction. I mentioned that suppliers that do not have water shortage contingency plans are required to implement and enforce a additional requirements, and that includes limiting landscape irrigation to 2 days per week. This does not apply to EMWD since we do have an approved water shortage contingency plan, and we are currently in stage 3A of that plan. We have to submit our final supply and demand assessments. Again, this is an annual report by July 1. We're on track to complete. In fact, we'll be bringing this report to Planning Committee next week. And then the ban of irrigation on CII non-functional turf. We plan on building on existing programs, and I'm going to highlight a few of those in the next couple slides. But our next action is to develop an implementation and enforcement plan. EMWD has been a leader in the replacement of non-functional turf, having replaced almost 10 million square feet. We established water budgets for CII customers to continue to promote water use efficiency in this sector of our service area with these customers. We also conditioned our ARP Phase 3 participants to remove non-functional turf. Two of the examples, just last board meeting, you heard about our completion with the project with the lakes at Hemet West, and a few years ago, the successful completion of the project with Lowe's. And between just those two projects that participated in our ARP, we removed 520,000 square feet of non-functional turf. This board also took additional action in March by adopting a resolution that further commits EMWD to pursue replacement of non-functional turf, including participation with AQUA on legislative efforts in this arena. And we also are partnering with UCR to help to try to reduce the barriers of the upfront cost of turf replacement and to identify funding mechanisms and the benefits of non-functional turf programs that could further help these customers. In anticipation of the ban that was adopted last week The week prior, again, we anticipated this was coming. We did send a letter to our CII customers to give them advance notice. We've also done an evaluation of our existing CII non-functional turf customers to start performing targeted outreach. For the next steps, we will need to make a change to the administrative code to reflect the emergency regulations, and we will be bringing that to you at the next board meeting scheduled for June 15th. We also will be sending a follow-up letter with additional information to our CII customers to inform them of the mandate to discontinue irrigation of non-functional turf. We will clarify, though, that irrigation ban is not applicable for shared systems that are also irrigating trees and other perennial plants, and that they may be subject to enforcement actions. We'll be identifying CII customers that we can clearly see have irrigation systems dedicated to only non-functional turf. We'll be meeting with those property owners to provide drought information and also promote the programs that are available. We will actively promote the irrigation of trees. We will look for opportunities to assist with device replacement as necessary to potentially segregate trees and other plants from non-functional turf. And again, really promote the programs. We did confirm that Metropolitan is continuing their rebate program. And there were some concerns by our fellow agency, our sister agencies, that historically Metropolitan would only offer the rebate for, you know, existing landscape. And last year, Metropolitan changed their stance on that and does allow for a rebate even if the turf has not been irrigated. In essence, it's dying. That was a big change for Metropolitan, but we did confirm that is their current stance. So again, even as our CII customers stop irrigating those turf areas, they will still be eligible for those promotions in the future. We will need to determine our enforcement actions and implementation schedule for the irrigation ban. And really, this is going to serve as our springboard to developing a long-term plan to achieve the permanent elimination of CII non-functional turf in our service area. I did want to share a couple of examples of kind of some of our boots-on-the-ground investigation into this topic and some areas that are right of our top priorities for outreach. There's an HOA in Murrieta that has large turf areas. You can see kind of a strip, a sidewalk, and then a big area. You know, at minimum, that strip area would definitely fall under the category of non-functional turf. You see a commercial property in Hemet, again, with large areas of turf. There's a church in Moreno Valley that looks like a really good candidate. And then the picture at the top right is an example of what's a potential challenge. This median strip in Hemet has non-functional turf, but it also has trees. So again, we'll need to do some additional boots on the ground investigation and work with our partner agencies and our CII customers to really identify the best way to implement this and ensure, you know, the tree health and other environmental benefits of that while still reducing our CII non-functional turf water use.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second? I just want to be very cautious of how we approach religious organizations and that we don't come across as big government telling you how to run your facilities. I just want to throw that out there as a caution that we treat them with kind of respect and help them move towards where we want to get, though. But I really want to make sure we're not taking a big brother approach to that.
Thank you, President Pauly. And we absolutely will. That has been our approach with all of our customers, and I appreciate your continued commitment to that. Thank you. And with that, I'll take any other comments or questions.
No questions.
Excellent report. I just want to... You have a great knowledge, personally, of statewide water and water districts and things. And I'm going to guess Eastern continues to be at the forefront of all these programs throughout the state, correct?
We are.
And I just want to me, people should be looking at what we're doing here as examples rather than some folks in Sacramento then in giving us helpful hints on how to run our business. I kind of look at that should be the other way around, because I think this the people like yourself and the people who work here are really a leader in water conservation. And so I just want to toot our own horn for a second that we are doing all the right things, and it still kind of rubs me the wrong way when you have other people then suggest how we could do better when we're doing a fine job at this. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, President Pauly.
Anything else, Director Record? Any comments?
Oh, sure. I have a few. Great presentation. Thank you. I really appreciate the where Eastern is at, all the way through from the board to staff. I think we have played a role in where we're at today as far as regulations or emergency orders that the state's put in place. It's an opportunity for us. It's a challenge. It's going to be a lot of work, but I'm really pleased that we're where we're at. We've already sent a letter out saying, hey, we think this is coming. We're looking for ways to help the transition, because we know that in the state we're in, as far as drought goes and the longevity of it and everything that goes along with it, we just can't afford to do business the way we've always done it. And so I'm really pleased that we're taking actions to try to change the culture and literally change the landscape, pun intended, going forward. So anything I can do to support staff, I'm ready to do, and appreciate the hard work.
Thank you, Director Rickard.
All right. Thank you for a great presentation. Appreciate it. We will go on to item 7 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. Would I look for a motion? Director Armstrong, a motion. Director Slauson, would you like to second that?
I do.
Very good.
May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. That will bring us to our calendar review. Good morning, Jennifer.
Two events for your consideration today. One is the Riverside County Water Task Force virtual series. It is tomorrow's Solutions Today, which will be February 17th at 7:30 in the morning. It is a Zoom meeting. The second event is the desalter, Paris II desalter ribbon cutting ceremony, which is the morning of Thursday, June 23rd at 9 a.m. So all board members are appreciate to attend. The invites for both of those are on the back of the calendar review. So next is the board master calendar. Please make sure you review and let me know if there's any changes, corrections, or additions to the calendar for the next 2 weeks. On the third page is the upcoming events and participants. We have the WRCOG's General Assembly Dinner with Steve Wozniak. There are still seats available if anyone's interested in attending. That, again, is also Thursday the 23rd at 6:30 in the evening at Pechanga. And in August, there is 2 water conferences, one with the Southern California BIA and the other one with the Urban Water Institute, which there is availability for those as well. So if you're interested, please let me know. If you need further information, I'll be happy to supply that for you. Listed as well is the board meetings for the next 3 months, currently on schedule, along with all the board committee meetings on schedule, with the one change that took place is the retirement trust is this afternoon at 4 o'clock. So, and the lastly, on the last page, is the interagency meetings for the next 3 months from June to August, which currently are all on schedule. And a sweet little reminder that the 4th of July will be next month, and the EMWD's offices will be closed on that Monday. So,
good.
Questions? Thank concludes my report.
No problem. Appreciate that. We will go on to directors' activities reports. We will start with Director Armstrong.
One meeting to report on. That was the City of Paris State of the City address, and it's the first time I've attended the Paris one, and it was really a well done event, and I thought it was really promising what they had to share. The city is putting in amenities for their citizens that are really impressive, and they showed some trends of their reserve balances as a city that just continue to grow, and they get more fiscally sound each year, and just looks like they're doing really well. So I thought it was a really good event.
Appreciate that. Director Corona.
Yes, my only meeting was with the general manager, and that was a good meeting.
Very good. I attended the IE Works board meeting, figuring out how we can work with them at Eastern. Went to the joint EMWD Western Municipal Water District Joint Committee meeting, had a very extensive update with the Western general manager on his efforts, and Western leading on some statewide issues on creating more water storage and more water supply. WRCOG filming, a little interesting. Director Denstedt at Western and I are the two water participants on WRCOG, and they're going through filming an innovation series for the upcoming General Assembly. And we are actually going to film parts where we talk about some of the things the Water District has done, because I thought during the drought, rather than because Water District's unique at WRCOG, we should do something about the innovations that we have done here at Eastern. So we're going to be doing that in the next we had filmed a segment, and they basically came back and said that was great, but maybe we should do something different. So I think I suggested that we talk about a recycled system on some of our parks and how we're keeping green grass during a drought. So more to come on that. And then the Hemet San Jacinto Water meeting, some supply or updates on statewide supplies, keeping the rates about the same for the upcoming next year at the Water Master. So that was my report. Director Record.
So I just have the fourth Tuesday committee meetings at Metropolitan. We had a one water committee meeting and a lot of discussion about conservation going forward, and then some other meetings. And so I will say that there is an effort to cut down on meetings, so there will be no fourth Tuesday committee meetings in July, and they're trying to condense the July committee and board meetings to one day. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but it'll keep you posted.
Very good. Thank you. Director Slauson?
Yes, I attended the joint Western meeting. We discussed, Director Pauly mentioned, but the Met water supply statewide, and the Wildlife Refuge, and then the Solve the Water Crisis Coalition, Craig Miller's working on. Attended the Chamber Wake Up breakfast, and Mike Hestron, DA, was there. He gave the presentation, and had a monthly meeting with Joe Mawad, and that's always nice to have additional information on upcoming projects. That's it.
Very good. With that, do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? See none. And we'll ask legal counsel if we have a need for closed session today.
Mr. Chair, as it described as item 10 under Government Code Section 54956.9b.
Very good. And I'll ask the secretary. We're going to stay in here for closed session. We will take a minute or two to switch out for closed session then.
Okay.
Okay. We're back in open session. Could I ask our legal counsel to report out of closed session?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss anticipated litigation. The board received a report and took action on the claim of Mr. Nelson on motion of Director Pauly, seconded by Director Slauson. The board voted unanimously to reject the claim of Mr. Nelson. That concludes my closed session report.
All right. With that, we will stand adjourned until June 15th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.